We will continue in our trek through the book of John. And we reach what, in my opinion, is a climax of the Gospel of John. It is what I would term the upper room experience. Five chapters from the book of John, which highlight the final things, instructions that the Lord gave his disciples, beginning in John chapter 13. Boy, if we had time to play a game, there's a game that maybe you've done something similar. It's a memory game, and for some of us, we're disqualified automatically. I can't remember what I had for breakfast. How about you this morning? But for others, it's a looking back and remembering experience. I remember when, fill in the blank. I remember when, the good old days, some previous time period, an experience that you had growing up. If you and I were to sit down and compare notes, I would suggest that all of us have had life-changing experiences. I remember when. There once happened in my life a situation that forever marked me, changed me. Now, we tend to gravitate towards the negative, don't we? Remember those difficult times or hard experiences or bad things. But shame on us for that. The Lord has done some outstanding things in your life, whether you perceive them or not. And some of those were pivotal. He used situations or experiences in your life to alter, ultimately, your destiny forever. I would suggest that if John were to sit down with you and I, the Apostle John, he would say, I remember when the Lord took us into an upper room. It was the night in which he was betrayed, that tragic night. It was the night in which all of his disciples would desert him. One of his closest friends would deny that he even knew him. Another would disown him for 30 pieces of silver. It was on that night. John says, I remember. And it changed my life when this man from Galilee flowed into my life and I never recovered. And it made such an impact on him that of his book of 20 chapters, one-fourth of his book is dedicated to just a few hours that he had with the Lord on that night. What an experience in the upper room. Looking forward to taking the summer and just highlighting the things that Jesus said in those last few hours of life to his disciples, the things that John recorded that dramatically changed him. And I would suggest that as we do our homework, we'll do the same for you and I. John chapter 13, verse 1. He records it was just before the Passover feast. Now, that's the third time that he said this in three chapters. John chapter 11, he tells us that the Passover was coming. John chapter 12, verse 1, he tells us it was 5 days before the Passover. It was in that final week. We call that Holy Week. And now he says it was just before the Passover feast, that very same day. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. Well, other parts of Scripture we are told that God demonstrates his love for us and that while we are yet sinners, what? Christ died. And we look at death and his sacrificial death as the full extent, expression of his love. Jesus said, greater love has no one than this. Remember the verse? Then he laid down his life. And you and I would look at that and think, well, he's about to die, isn't he? I'm going to suggest that parallel with sacrifice, there's another way to fully extend your love, and it is through service. And I believe that John is referring not just to the death of Christ, but to what directly follows in the text here. Jesus now shows them just how much he really loves them by what takes place. Verse 2, the evening meal was being served. The devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Hey, when's the last time the devil prompted you to dupe somebody that you loved? When's the last time that you felt a prod or a prompting and discerned that it was the enemy who was initiating a work in through your life? We'll pick up on Judas, although he's mentioned here. I want to pick up on him next week. We'll ask ourselves, how is it possible for a disciple or follower of Jesus to become an instrument of the devil? I think we gain some clues from here in a few other parts of John. So let's hold on Judas for today. He was prompted by the devil to betray Jesus. Verse 3, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and was returning to God. You know, when you know who you are, you never have to worry about losing face. If you know who you are, if you have a sense of identity, self-confidence, and security in who you are, technically you're indestructible. Doesn't matter what anyone else says or thinks or does. Ultimately, Jesus knew his time was up. He had a great sense of timing, didn't he? He only did those things that the Father led him to do at the appropriate times. He knew who he was. He knew where he was from and where he was going. He had a sense of identity. He had a sense of direction. He had a sense of destiny. And as a result, verse 4, what does he do? He gets up from the meal. He took off his outer clothing and he wraps himself with a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin. And of all things, he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. I don't know, I hear complaints about jobs these days in our economy, and yet some people admitting that they wouldn't have, under other circumstances, taken such a job, seen below them. Or others, perhaps, will hold out until they can find one that fits their status. There was and is, probably always has been, a hierarchy within most societies of service. In the Jewish society, the most menial task that someone could have amongst servants and slaves, do you want to guess what it could be? Was washing feet. Typically, the foot washer was someone who had been worn out, perhaps an elderly person who was no longer capable of working in the fields or doing other domestic services, possibly someone who was crippled or maimed. And the best that they could do would be to sit at the door, and as people came in, they would wash their feet before entering the house. If we had a little more time this morning, if I didn't have so much paraphernalia up front, I was going to get the kids up here and show them why they had to wash feet. You see, in my family, when it's time to eat, we usually tell our kids, wash your hands before you eat. Do you wash your hands before you eat? I have yet to have somebody say, wash your feet before you eat. Well, you see, they didn't recline at tables like we do, with your feet neatly tucked underneath the table. They sat on the floor oftentimes, and the table was at chair height. And they would frequently lean on an elbow, and their feet would be extended towards the person next to them. So with good reason, you could quickly lose your appetite if that person had been treading where donkeys tread. What is that odor I smell? It's not the quiche. It's Peter's feet. And for that reason, it was necessary, perhaps not only the hands, but to wash your feet before you ate. And so Jesus lowers himself to that lowest rung on the ladder, socially. He assumes what we are told in the book of Philippians is the nature of a servant, a slave. And he begins to wash his disciples' feet and dry him with a towel. Now, as you can imagine, you remember the text here, this didn't fly too well with Peter. Peter is peeved, to say the least. He's ticked off. This bothers him. Verse 6. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? You got to be kidding. A not going to wash my feet. Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. No way. Now, why is Peter? Well, typically he was a spokesman for the crowd, wasn't he? But I think we have a little insight if you turn to the Gospel of Luke, why Peter in particular piped up at this point. Luke chapter 22 records a similar account, and Luke adds a detail in his account. In fact, Luke, we understand, had written his gospel not as an eyewitness, but to the testimony of Peter as an eyewitness of the life of Jesus. And so he adds a detail there on the Last Supper, chapter 22, verse 6. Then came the day of unleavened bread on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. Verse 8. Jesus said to who? Peter and John. Go and make preparations for us to eat the Passover. Aha! It was Peter's job to set this thing up. And he had missed one detail. He had forgotten to hire a servant to wash feet that night, as would have been customary, especially in such a ritualistic, meaningful meal as the Passover. Now, Peter himself, recognizing that there was no one to wash feet, you will notice, did not volunteer for the task. Why? Because that would have been an admission of his low stature, standing amongst the disciples. Scripture is very candid. It gives us a clear picture of people, godly people, warts and all. One of the things we find in the Gospels, as is recorded the life of Jesus and his teaching, is that the disciples frequently tangled with one another. They had what we could call apostolic arguments from time to time. Do you know what the most discussed theme was? You know what they argued the most about? Wasn't about the Trinity. Wasn't about salvation or baptism, some of the things that we tend to argue about. Do you know what you find in Scriptures the disciples tangling with one another most often about? Who is the greatest? Oh, no, you're not. I am. You can imagine those discussions, and frequently we find Jesus interrupting them. Oh, brother, these are the 12 guys that I put in charge of my empire here when I leave. Fighting over who's going to be sitting on my right and who's going to be sitting on my left. Which of us is the most important? And from time to time, Jesus has to remind them the greatest is the least. The first will be last. Unless you become like a servant, he tells them, you'll never be great in my kingdom. Unless you become like, he pulls a little kid into the group, this little kid. He says, you're not going to be great. You see, we do just the opposite. We take a little kid and, or a group of kids, school class, we take them into a politician's office or we take them down to the fire station and we show these little kids, great people. Look at this guy. If you guys really work at it, someday you're going to be great like he or she. Jesus did the very opposite. He took a politician, a couple of fishermen, some businessmen. He took a little kid in amongst them. He said, now listen, if you guys really work at it, someday you're going to be great like this little kid. Unless you become like a little child. In fact, you'll never see the kingdom. Not childishness, but childlikeness. Greatness. And so Peter, along with the rest of the 12, refused to meet the need that was at hand, washing the feet. And Jesus, when he recognized the problem, immediately solved the situation. And it did not fly well with Peter. Pick up there in the text. Jesus, again, Peter says, you shall never wash my feet. He answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. You don't understand this yet, Peter. You will. But if you don't allow me to do this for you, Peter, to wash your feet, you cannot be part of my group. To which Peter responds, then Lord, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body's clean. And you are clean, though not every one of you." John adds, "For he knew who was going to betray him." And that's why he said, "Not every one of you was clean." Even though he had just washed the betrayer's feet, Judas himself. And we find here is an example. Verse 12, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked. Well, the answer at this point is no. They still didn't get it. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." He's given an example of leadership. We call that servant leadership, don't we? As Lord and teacher. Verse 15, "I have set for you an example that you should do as I have done." Why don't more people do as Jesus did? I don't know. What's the lowest task at home? Hierarchy of chores. Probably ought to ask Mom. The least likely job. Dad, maybe you ought to step up and take out the garbage more often. Clean out the garbage disposal. Pick up after the dog. I don't know, what is that task? We don't wash feet like they used to, although perhaps somebody here this morning could use a good foot washing. That was a necessity in those days. But you know, there are other menial things that you could do to serve a need, to serve someone else, and stoop like Jesus did down in order to lift someone else up. An example I've left for you. I don't know, what speaks louder, actions or words? What would you suspect? Remember this one, don't you? Your walk talks and your talk talks, but your walk talks louder than your talk talks. Remember that one? Your walk talks and your talk talks, but your walk or talk? Your walk talks louder than your talk talks. Let's try it. Your walk talks and your talk talks, but your walk talks louder than your talk talks. Do you get it? Actions. Somebody once said, "I'd rather see a good sermon than hear one any day. I'd rather have you walk beside me than merely point the way. The eye is a far more ready pupil than ever was the ear. Good advice can be confusing, but example is always clear." I'd rather see a good sermon than hear one any day. Jesus, preacher par excellence, never has anyone ever rivaled him in terms of the power of his preaching. But it was his example, it was his life, is what he did that ultimately impacted the world. And John says it was on that night, a fateful night, that he demonstrated just how much he loved us. All of us with dirty feet, none of us willing to admit. And yet Jesus lowered himself beneath us to elevate us. He, Master and Lord, has served a real need in our lives. Set an example that you should do as I have done. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. In other words, you guys are not greater than I am. I'm Lord and Master here, and yet it's going to be your turn to do likewise. Now that you know these things, verse 17, you will be blessed when? Because you know them, you'll be blessed when you do them. Turn over to the book of Philippians, if you would. Chapter 2. The Apostle Paul picks up on the concept here, the example of Christ, and challenges you and I vicariously this morning via the Philippian church to follow suit. Philippians chapter 2. Let me start in the beginning, although I want to pick up in the second part of this paragraph. Verse 1, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from His love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness, compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Now, the context of Philippians, the Apostle Paul is writing to the church from prison. But there is apparently a dispute occurring over the leadership in Philippi. In fact, you find a little more detail if you turn the page to chapter 4, between, in this case, interestingly enough, two women, lay leaders within the church, Euodia and Syntyche. And he challenges them in chapter 4 to become one, united, to agree together as to the work and the ministry of Philippi. And in that context, he picks up here in chapter 2 with the example of Christ. Verse 3, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Philippians 2, 3. But in humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. You see, a servant is someone who exists to make life better for self, for others. That is the whole point and purpose of the life of a servant. He or she exists simply to serve, to make someone else's life better. Verse 5, your attitude should be the same as that of Jesus Christ, who being in very nature God, he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped or held on to. Verse 7, he made himself nothing. Notice, taking the very nature of what? A servant. From the nature of God in glory, Jesus takes on the nature. He chooses willingly to abandon the glory of heaven, so to speak, and to pick up the garb of an ordinary slave or servant. Made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross. Therefore, because of that, here's where the blessings come in. God exalted him to the highest place. He gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, in heaven, on earth, and under the earth, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, Master, King, to the glory of God the Father. That came after, didn't it? Not before. He offered himself to the world as a servant, and ultimately the sacrifice for the sins of humanity. Henry Ford once said that life is not measured by duration, but by donation. It's not how long you live. It's how well you live. It's not what you get out of life that matters in the end, but what? It's what you give back that really counts. Granger, I appreciate your attitude. Remember when you came to this church, probably 10, 12 years ago. Wish more people would follow in your train. He came to me and he said, Pastor, he said, I want to get involved. He said, where can I serve? Wow, it was that JFK moment. Ask not what your country can do for you. Remember that one? Where can I serve? And I've appreciated his willingness to serve ever since. Because the greatest among you, Jesus said, are the lowest. You don't even know they're there. They're sustaining the rest of us by their service. Now that you know these things, Jesus said, you'll be blessed if you do them. Let's pick up just two more verses here and we'll close out in John 13. Skip over from where we're at in 17 over to verse 34. Summarizing statement, Jesus says, a new command I give you, love one another. As I've loved you. Now listen, he hasn't died yet, has he? As I have loved you, sacrificially. How has he loved them? Well, he just got done serving them. Because love is manifest both in sacrifice and in service. Jesus says, the way that I've loved you, the genuine concern that I've exhibited for you, meeting needs amongst you. Full circle, he says, now love one another. Finally, by this, by what? By that. Not by what church you go to. Not by what Bible you read. Not by what you do or do not do. Not by your dress code. Not by the bumper stickers on the back of your car. He said, by this one thing, proof positive, that you're one of my disciples. Just this one thing will tip off the world that you're following me. What was it? It was the way that you care for people. Because you really care. Because you love as the Savior loved. Well, in terms of application this morning, I've got a couple of questions for you there. Let's check in with the text and weigh ourselves. What might washing feet look like in your life today? At home, mom or dad? Perhaps at work, amongst colleagues, the leadership of the company that you're with or corporation, boss? How about in the neighborhood next door? I would imagine that when Jesus washed his disciples' feet, they just felt cleaner. He made them feel more comfortable, presentable. When people come in contact with you, is that the way they feel when they leave your presence? I just feel clear. I feel better. I just feel more at ease because you've washed their feet. Jesus left an example for us to follow. What about you and I? Have you left an example for others to follow? Whether you realize it or not, people are watching. They know especially that you confess Christ. They're going to watch to see if he's obviously active in your life. Your example. Remember, the walk talks louder than the talk talks. Finally, can those around me tell that I am a disciple of Jesus Christ by the quality of my relationships, genuine concern, willingness to sacrifice and serve for others? Jesus said, that's proof positive that you belong to me. Simple song I'd like to close with. I think you're familiar with the words. Just reiterates what Jesus has told us here in John 13. He said, they will know us by our love. Why don't you stand up this morning? Let's finish up there.